Welcome to Hero Hype, episode number 46. We are back. I am not Danya, but Danya is here with me. So I'm Caitlin, and hi, Danya.
Hi.
So just a quick reminder that if you want to get in touch with us, we are on Twitter at Hero Hype Podcast, and you can email us at herohypepodcast@gmail.com or post on this post on hypeable.com. But before we get started with everything, let's just address the elephant in the room that we are a little bit late on this. So, Danya, would you like to tell us why we're a little late?
Yes, I would. So, I was in the middle of editing towards the end of editing the Batman v Superman episode that we did, the special edition, and Audacity crashed out and lost all of my edits, and I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding. And I thought, no worries, we've got a standard normal episode coming up, and oh, my Mac has some updates that need to be done, so I'll run the updates, get back in, and I'll edit the normal episode. And then Audacity kept crashing. Half the software on my computer was crashing, and turns out there was a bug in the software updates that has caused a load of the programs to crash on my Mac. There is now a fix, so I have installed that fix, which means that I can now edit all of the episodes and get them up. So I've edited the two episodes that are due to come out a couple of times, but it hasn't been able to save them. So they're done. I apologize. And hopefully, fingers crossed, touch wood, all of that, we won't have any more problems with the editing software. So
yes, knock on wood.
Yeah, but we will say that there will be a delay next week because I'm going to see Civil War. So I'm not going to be around to actually record for a couple of days, because I'm seeing it on between the Thursday, Friday at midnight, then I'm seeing it again on the Friday, and then I may be seeing it again on the Saturday with Natalie from Hypeable. So I'll be back in my house and all Civil War out by Sunday, probably.
And I'll be seeing Civil War on May 6th.
Yeah. I know. It's gonna be crazy, but it's almost here for both of us. It's almost here. It's
but so closer close. For Danya, so send your jealous yells at Danya. I already have.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, so never fear, we missed a week of episodes, but we will cover them briefly in our recaps this week, so we'll be up to date with all the episodes by the time we are done with the episode today. So sorry for the mess up in schedule. We are working to get back on it.
Yes.
All right, so we're going to take a week off of brief history this week and next week.
Yeah, so we'll come back with it after Civil War. So, because things have been so crazy and I've been literally pulling my hair out trying to get everything fixed on the editing side, that I don't want to give you a brief history or even a comic corner that's kind of substandard and I haven't spent some time at least looking into and figuring out and doing a little bit of research and rereading stuff. So we'll come back with that after the craziness of Civil War is done and we're all back on track. Then we will bring brief history and comic corner back in.
Or Danya's craziness with Civil War is done. I won't have seen it yet. Yeah. I will just continue being jealous the whole time.
I know, and I'll have to, like, bite my fist to, like, not be able to talk to Caitlin about it. I'll be like, oh no.
Yeah, so that's true of brief history and of Comic Corner. So none of those this week or next week will be dedicating the time this week to our recaps, since we have extra episodes to catch up on. But before we get there, we'll go to TV news, and we have such a long list of TV news. Our whole one story.
And it isn't necessarily TV related either. It's just about the lip sync battle episode that we have been waiting for. So we said gosh, how long ago was it announced? It was probably before Christmas it was announced that Clark Gregg and Hayley Atwell were going to be on Spike's lip sync battle. And the episode finally was released, so it was on this week, on Thursday. My time zones are kind of all messed up a little bit, so I always see just the clips, the YouTube clips of these episodes, because we don't get it over in the UK. But Clark Gregg defeated Hayley Atwell in lip sync battle, and kind of deservedly so, I think.
Like, oh, I thought it was questionable, but okay.
Really?
Yes.
Like, I thought Hayley Atwell did particularly well in that Lady Gaga getup, but I don't know. Clark Gregg with Toxic was something.
That was a thing that happened, and I cannot unsee.
Nope. Never unseeing that again. I think for me, Clark Gregg actually did more lip syncing, like actual to an actual song, whereas the Bad Romance bit with Hayley Atwell, unless I got like a shortened version of it, because what I saw was mostly just the rah-rahs for Hayley Atwell's, which is why I kind of thought Clark Gregg deserved it, because there was slightly less lip syncing in Hayley Atwell's, but they were both really impressive.
I mean, I was impressed with the shoes that Hayley Atwell was wearing and that she didn't break her ankles.
I know. Those were some insane shoes. I was a little bit disappointed that Clark Gregg didn't do his in heels, actually. He could have, I mean, he's got some great legs. He could have rocked a pair of heels.
Yeah, that was one thing. He showed off some pretty nice legs.
That's he did. He did. He's got some great back definition as well. You know, when he turned around and you see, like, the back as he's walking away. Like, he's got... he's pretty fit underneath.
Yeah, underneath. He goes to the gym.
Yeah, definitely. But it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed watching both of these. I thought it was pretty great all around, honestly, but I always enjoy seeing them lip-sync battling, and maybe we might see a return of Dub Smash Wars at some point, maybe post-Comic-Con this year for charity again. I'd like that. I'd like it to become, like, a yearly thing. I think that would be quite fun.
Could be. And, yeah, so that was our whole TV news of the week. So we will just jump right into our TV recaps. And I guess we'll start with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And we have two episodes to talk about.
Yeah, which they kind of tied really heavily into each other. So obviously we have found out that, well, the team has now found out that Hive is a thing and that Ward is back, so they're all kind of dealing with that stuff. So, yeah, I guess the biggest developments came this week, really, when essentially everyone got kidnapped. Like, the whole team got kidnapped, and the Secret Warriors had to go in and save them, so... It was actually, this week's episode, I was really impressed with. The week before, I enjoyed that episode where they went to go and see the crazy guy out in the middle of nowhere with his landmines and his Kree artifacts that he stole and all of that. Like, it was an enjoyable episode. It was nice to see some just little developments and smaller moments between smaller team members. But this week, we got what was essentially a bottle episode. Once they'd got the initial infiltration of the base out of the way and they saved everyone and got them back onto the ship and back onto S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters, they go into lockdown, they go into quarantine because Malik, who they also managed to capture while they're doing their rescue of all of the captured non-inhuman agents, tells them that someone has been exposed to Hive, or potentially all of them have been exposed to Hive, and what Hive does is essentially controls them, takes over them. So I found it was actually quite an intense episode where we didn't really know who was infected, if multiple people were infected, and you kind of had this tension building up of who has Hive taken, because when they're saving all of, like, May and Coulson and all of those, they all split up. So they're all alone at one point or another. And you don't follow each character while they're doing their rescuing. So it legitimately could have been any of them. So they did a lot of back and forth, who is it, who is it not, you know. And for me, it was like really, it was really tense. Did it work as like a sort of bottle episode for you? Because bottle episodes can either be really, really good or just kind of eh, or really unsuccessful. But I think personally, as a bottle episode, this one was quite good.
Admittedly, I watched them both back to back, and I don't remember where one episode stopped and the other one started. So I have a hard time judging them because I fell behind a couple weeks and had to watch them together. So I don't remember where one stopped and the other started, but I do remember thinking that the rescue was going to take a lot longer than like the 5 minutes of the episode that it did. I was expecting that to be at least half the episode, if not more.
Yeah, I'd expected that as well from like the promos and stuff and the articles that had been like talking about it. And I was like, oh, it's going to be like a heist kind of episode thing. And then getting into the episode, it was completely different to my expectations of what it was going to be. Not in a bad way. I really, really enjoyed the quarantine bit. I thought it was really tense, and I kind of couldn't figure out who was the infected in human right up until Lincoln was the sort of red herring one, and I was like, oh no, oh, it's Daisy, oh no, because the thing that tipped me off was the fact that she was so willing to, like, kind of throw him under the bus, but in a way that it didn't seem right. Not everything was adding up exactly, and I was like, something's off here. And then, yeah, it's eventually revealed that Daisy has been infected by Hive, and she's now drinking the inhuman Kool-Aid in a big way, and, yeah, has kind of buried S.H.I.E.L.D. Underground. Like, she's literally, she's literally buried them all.
But she tried to get Lincoln to go with her first.
I know.
It was interesting that, I guess it leads to the question of how much of the person is retained under the control and how much of it isn't, because it doesn't seem like, I mean, I guess Hive would be invested in bringing another inhuman to their side, but at the same time, like, he's clearly got this loyalty too. He's the one who's like, we can't leave, we can't just throw S.H.I.E.L.D. away. Like, at this point, he's weirdly become the one, like, more loyal to S.H.I.E.L.D., which is kind of a giveaway at that point that he's not the one infected, even though she frames him, which is this horrible betrayal to him.
That whole, it was really jarring to see Daisy basically turning on everything that we've known her to be since season one, like, so interested in doing the right thing for the greater good for the most part, rather than, I guess, I don't know, it was so creepy. It was basically like the same switch that we saw in Ward in season one, when he was kind of like that dry everyman kind of by the book kind of character right up until he went cray cray and shot everyone and then kind of descended into to villainy full out. It kind of gave me that same kind of whiplash feeling when they revealed that Daisy was now on their side. And I was like, oh my God.
Except hers wasn't by choice and he was an awful human.
No, I know that. But I just meant like the same kind of that gut-wrenching kind of whiplash feeling of, oh no. That was the feeling that I got from it. It was the same as that massive season one reveal, which, you know, is kind of good that they managed to blindside me with it, with her being the mole for all intents and purposes, but...
Yeah, they really wanted you to think it was Joey.
I know.
Because they kept being like, oh, he's somewhere else. Where is he? Oh, he's acting suspicious. And yeah. Then they're like, oh, it's obviously Lincoln.
I know. And then. But, yeah, so she's buried them. She's buried everyone under rubble. She basically used her powers as well to essentially vibrate Malik's insides and kill him. Like, it was really...
She faked the device thing.
Right? Yeah, she did that to stop anyone from being able to tell how he died. So then, yeah, so she vibrated his insides until he died, basically. Like, he started splitting apart and bleeding and...
He wasn't wrong when he said Hive was his murderer because she was infected with Hive at that point.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. And then she used a sort of grenade and blew him up so that they wouldn't be able to tell who had killed Malik. And, yeah. Oh my God. I can't believe, like, this is the direction now, all the way to the end of this season, is that's it. Daisy's on the other side. Now it's going to become, how do you cure the Hive infection? Because it's a parasite. We found that out now. They've discovered that it's a parasite and it lives within people. Or within inhumans.
And they found, like, all the traces in what's-his-face's brain.
Yeah.
So, like, it physically alters their brains.
Yes. So, but it doesn't... It alters them, but doesn't damage them. So they made it sound like it is something that could be reversible. They just need to figure out the way to do that. The same way that they needed to figure out how to detect it. So, yeah. Caitlin, you had maybe a theory about the inhuman vaccine, possibly.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that is going to be the key to saving Daisy from Hive, or it's obvious that they want to create a bunch of new inhumans because Daisy stole all the crystals at the end.
Yeah.
So it seems like they're going to want to build up inhumans, so I'm wondering if that is how the inhuman vaccine is going to come into play, because it didn't work for Andrew, so who is it going to work for?
Yeah. Oh, man. But basically, the whole game has changed now. And we've still got Civil War to tie in, which will probably have huge ramifications again for the show. So this show keeps getting massive shakeups in its entire DNA, pretty much. So I'm really interested to see where it keeps going now for the remainder of this season. Like, they keep doing really interesting things for me. So, yeah, this part of the season has been interesting.
I was really angry that they fridged another lady, though.
I know. The thing is that with this one and in isolation, with this show, even though we've basically had almost exclusively women dying on this part of the TV season, we did just lose Charles as well, and we also lost Malik, and we lost that entire boardroom of male boardroom kind of guys when they took over the company, when they went to get the was it the Deathlock technology stuff? So,
but she was specifically murdered to cause Malik pain, which is, that's what gets me. Like, he literally did it because, oh, you're an asshole, basically, so feel pain.
Yeah, I mean, he then died pretty quickly after that as well. So
that's two this season that have been fridged, which I always felt like S.H.I.E.L.D. was pretty good with its women, but this has made me cringe a bit.
Mm. I mean, if they'd have drawn it out more, like the same way that they kind of drew it out with Coulson and the kind of guilt that he's feeling, if they'd have drawn it out a lot more with Malik as a character, it would have bothered me a hell of a lot more. I think with this one specifically, because Malik was killed so quickly after his daughter, that it's kind of like mostly just Hive craziness for me. Like he's basically killing whoever the hell he feels like is no longer going to be of use to him.
It just feels pointless to me that Malik died so quickly after. Like, what's the point of killing his daughter if he's gonna die the next episode? It just seems completely and utterly pointless.
Yeah, I don't know why they introduced his daughter basically just to kill her off. Like, that doesn't make sense to me, because the story with him and his brother was enough for me in terms of a betrayal for him then to come back within Hive, and then basically we don't know whether it's Hive using the memory of Malik's brother to manipulate Malik into thinking this is his brother's doing for his brother's revenge. Like, it was really kind of sinister the way that it was happening, but I think that was actually quite compelling, that little flashback that we got to the Malik family and how they grew up and what they believed and what happened with, or how they sent people to become Hive's host and so on. But I guess, yeah, it, for me, because it kind of, they kind of just, Hive just kind of wiped pretty much everyone out, I was, I guess, slightly less bothered than I would have been if she'd have been a bigger character. Like, she'd have been around for a lot longer, that we'd gotten to know her, that maybe, because she was quite a competent character for a bad guy, like, more so than her father. So if she'd have stuck around longer, I think I would have been more pissed off, because she was pretty competent. I was actually kind of enjoying her as a character.
I wish they had left Malik alive longer to deal with it.
Yeah.
Basically, that's how I feel about it. Just, it felt very anticlimactic for him to die like that with all the buildup he had. And maybe that was the point, but it just felt kind of like a waste of a potentially interesting story with that character having been completely turned off the path that he had spent his whole life on, and being so disillusioned with it that he turned to his enemies to stop it. Like, that's interesting to me.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's a shame, because it would have been nice to see it play out more.
And I wouldn't have, you know, it's not his death that bothers me, and not necessarily his daughter's death, because everyone was dying. It was the way it happened and the context of it that sort of rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah. But we've got bigger things to worry about now.
Yes. Indeed.
I guess fans of it have got Skyward back, I guess.
Oh, that preview, and he's, like, holding her. I just, like, my skin crawled.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just really, it's giving me, like, yeah, those chills, but not good chills.
Yeah,
like,
I was really grossed out.
Yeah.
And I think you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get the impression you're supposed to be like, oh, finally! Like, oh god, everything is awful.
Yeah. They're now, like, a murder couple.
And one is a giant parasite, and the other one has no capability for consent because they are being mind controlled. Like,
yeah,
everything is horrible.
It is basically horrible, and I guess as well, with the base buried, we don't actually know if everyone's alive at this point either. So
Yeah, I have a feeling that'll come later. I think whatever death we get will be later.
Yes, I'm sure. And it's happening in space.
Oh.
Did you notice in the little flash that we got to Daisy's vision this time that you see you got a close-up of the necklace with the cross, which was Elena's necklace.
Oh, interesting.
They better not kill Elena.
Stop killing women!
Basically, that's what I've been screaming at TV lately. I'm done with women dying on shows. And not to say that I think that women should be completely immune to being killed off, but women have exclusively died this TV season. Whether they be queer women or whether they be straight women, it's women dying.
Or they haven't been asked back to the shows they are main characters
on. Oh, don't even get me started on that. I am so, so mad about that. For budgetary reasons? Are you kidding me? Oh, right. No, we're not getting
Let's talk about something happy, Tanya. Yes. Let's talk about Supergirl.
Yes.
So we have the final two episodes of Supergirl, and they were pretty much a two-parter. So the episodes that we have two of actually go quite well together. So yeah. This actually works out pretty well. So Supergirl looked at the activation of Myriad and what it was, which was this mind control technology that was used exclusively on National City, because the idea was to go to National City and then spread it out. And it was putting all the minds of the people who were affected to work on fixing all the world's problems, which, okay, whatever, we'll go with it. The only people unaffected were Kara, Cat Grant, and Maxwell Lord, which was a very interesting trio. I have to say, I quite enjoyed those interactions in the first episode. And I thought these two episodes did some very interesting things for Maxwell Lord, especially.
Yes.
Like, he's been, like, I feel like they really Lex Luthered him up with all the way up to the Bizarro story, and then they've dialed it back some since, because he has helped out more than once since then. So they're doing a good job of kind of playing with how, in the comics, that character very much straddles the line of good guy and bad guy. So they're really playing with that, and so he's the one, he creates technology to not be affected by Myriad, and he gives some to Cat Grant so she won't be affected. And he's the one, he actually helps, and he has this brilliant idea that they need to, like, bomb the city with kryptonite and kill hundreds of thousands of people, which, not a good plan, guys. Let's not do that.
Yeah, I like how, if no one has seen Batman v Superman, this isn't a massive spoiler, but at one point they do use a nuke. And I won't go into the specifics of the hows and wheres in case you haven't seen it and you don't want to be spoiled for it, but legitimately they think it's an amazing idea to nuke the atmosphere to wipe out a force that they've come up against. And I won't say who that force is, just in case you haven't seen it yet, and I don't want to spoil the specifics. But I liked how Supergirl basically addressed the fact that if you set off a bomb, whether it be a kryptonite bomb or a nuclear bomb, whether or not, doesn't matter the distance that you use on it, it's still gonna irradiate the atmosphere and then eventually kill off a load of people. And I like how Supergirl actually addressed the fact that you're weighing up a significant percentage of lives against the rest of the world, and when does it become worth it to kill off a load of people to save the rest of the world? And that was something that Batman v Superman did not address. They literally just set off a bomb in the atmosphere and irradiated it, so...
But you can listen to our special for more.
Yeah.
We have lots of thoughts.
Yeah. But I liked
Superman.
Yeah. Yeah.
He, Okay, I don't understand a little bit of this, because they give us the explanation, like, after Myriad goes off, Kara goes looking for Clark and ends up at the Fortress of Solitude, and Kellex tells her he's off-world, which I think would be totally fine as an explanation for him to not be there.
Yeah.
Like, he goes off-world all the time. Like, that's a thing that could happen. So it's up to her. But then, not long after, she gets a text from him that he's coming, and Superman, like, flies into the city and then is immediately affected by Myriad because he grew up on Earth, because Kara didn't, okay.
Yeah, like, I didn't get that either.
It was very strange.
I was kind of a little bit like, but technically Kara also spent a significant part of her latter childhood growing up on Earth. She is, maybe more than Superman, a child of two worlds. But I don't buy it. I don't buy that as the reason why Clark would be affected by Myriad, because I don't know.
I get what they were going for, because in the second part of the finale, we see him, and, like, after everyone's been freed from Myriad, he still hasn't. We never get an explanation for why it's affected him worse than other people, but the whole point is that Kara has to be the hero, and yeah. She came to Earth with the mission to protect him, and then can't, and then now in this finale she finally gets the opportunity to do so. So I see where they're going with it, but it was some very questionable logic to get there.
Yeah. Oh, it's kind of like superhero logic. It's fine, go with it.
But the kind of whole thing, like, I feel like what I really liked about this finale is that it just encapsulated everything that the whole first season has been. It was optimistic. It was very family oriented. And we got an actual happy ending out of it.
Yeah. So
it just feels like it took the entire first season and just put it in two episodes and just says, this is everything that we are about. Like, Kara frees the entire city by sending out a message about hope.
Yeah.
Like, this is what Supergirl is, distilled in two episodes. And I liked that.
Yeah, I did too. I was actually pretty happy with it. And I just liked seeing all of the relationships that we really enjoyed touched upon again. You know, you get to see Kara and Alex, even though, you know, they are kind of at odds because Alex is controlled by Myriad and that she's got kryptonite weapons and Kara's refusing to fight her. And she's trying to get through to her, but can't. And then their mother comes in and manages to get through to her. And just the fact that it was all about family. And I love that. And I like that we got a happy ending that it was hopeful. It was so refreshing that it was a superhero show that ended well.
And it was a John and Kara team up for everything. And
yeah,
I love it. We can see that they saved a lot of their budget to have a whole bunch of Martian Manhunter in the last two episodes.
Yes, definitely. And it worked a lot. It was worth it.
And it was also, we got, you know, Kara saves everybody. She sent after they defeat Indigo, which, oh my god, John, like, ripping her in two.
Oh my god, it was...
That was brutal.
I know. And then when she's, like, taunting them, when she's, like, cut in half, and I was like, oh, this is so creepy.
And the way Kara defeats Non, like, lasers through the eyes, like...
Yeah.
That was kind of horrifying, too, but... That character in the comics is lobotomized at one point, so I was going, are we supposed to assume he's dead or lobotomized?
Yeah.
I wasn't entirely sure what we were supposed to take from that.
I don't know. I don't know either. I don't know that he's dead.
Maybe. Because Kara is very anti-killing the whole time. So, I'm not sure. So, but she takes the ship, the Fort Ross, because they set off Myriad from Fort Ross. So she takes it up into space, which is hilarious because earlier in the episode, General Lane was like, you try moving a giant spaceship yourself. And she does.
I know. Oh, man.
And then she can't bring herself back because she's in space. So Alex uses Kara's pod and goes and rescues her because Alex is Supergirl's superhero, which I love, and that relationship just remains the core. So even though Kara and James actually get together at the end, that is never the focus. Like, they get some side plot, but the focus is so much more on the family aspect. And yeah. Kara has the whole scenes where she says her goodbyes to everybody, which was heartbreaking.
It really was. And I like that we got a little bit of romance, but it wasn't the focus. Like, I thought that worked really well.
I think that's kind of revolutionary that this character, this female hero, gets to have romance, but it doesn't define her.
Yeah.
It's just one of the things that is going on in her life.
Yes. Yeah.
And she got the boy. If they're going to say they get the girl, Kara got the boy.
Yes, she did. And it actually happened in a way that I was quite happy with it. And I like that he gave her a picture and said, this is my favorite picture that I've ever taken of Supergirl. And it's her. And yeah. Like, it's her as in Kara, not her as in Supergirl. And I was just like, oh.
And that's a nice parallel to the first, to the pilot, when she looks at the picture of Superman.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love them. I think they're adorable together.
Same. I love it.
Yeah. And then so Alex also reveals to her mother that their father is still alive, and that'll obviously be a season 2 plot line.
Cadmus,
and then
Cadmus.
Yep. Cadmus. And then at the very end, a new Kryptonian pod arrives, and Kara and Jean go after it, and Kara pulls the lid off, and we get an oh my god, and then that's it. So we better get a season 2 so we can find out who's in the pod.
Yeah. I don't know who it could be. I can't think of who it would be. Do you have any ideas?
I wonder, well, in the comics at one point, her father becomes Cyborg Superman.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if they'll go that route.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or Superboy. We'll just say it's Superboy.
It could be. That could be their play on the Cadmus thing. I don't know. I think if they're introducing Cadmus properly, I would like to see him introduced through that.
Yeah, that would make more sense.
I don't know if I would prefer, because then you'd have to think, wait, so the Kryptonians cloned Superman when he was a baby?
Cadmus had the ship and he tried to run away or something and use the ship.
There is that.
I don't know. I feel like they could, if they're introducing Cadmus, Superboy has to come up at some point.
Yeah.
Which, that could be fun.
Yes, definitely.
But, so, overall thoughts about season 1? Loved it. Thought it was okay. What did you think?
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. It's one of those shows that is much needed in the midst of all of these shows that kind of start going a little bit darker. And that's not to say that Supergirl doesn't have its moments. Like, it really does, but...
Yeah, the Red Kryptonite episode.
Yeah. It ended really hopeful. And it ended in a way that still had a lot of tension and threat to it. In respect to the villains and what they could do, without actually having to resort to making it look like someone was actually going to die or killing someone off for dramatic effect, barring the one Catco employee that died by jumping off a building. But
Kelly, we hardly knew ye.
Yeah, I know. But I really like the fact that our core group of characters are moving on to season 2, and we didn't lose a single one of them, and we get to know them more, and we get to see them develop more. Well, I'm assuming we're getting a season 2. I don't know why they wouldn't renew it, but...
They haven't renewed any of their freshman series yet.
Yes.
So it's not a Supergirl thing, I think they're waiting to see, like, pilots and all that. before they renew their freshman series. So there are other freshman series that are going to get renewed that they haven't renewed yet. So I think we should be optimistic about season two. The like Berlanti and Kreisberg and them have said that they're already talking about season two in the writer's room. So
yeah. So it's very likely that we're getting it. Also, Wynn grew on me. I actually went back and watched a lot of the first part of season one, and actually looking at his behavior from how I saw him, then what he moved into in the latter part of the season really helped with understanding him at the start. So going back and rewatching it, he's grown on me as a character a lot.
I liked him a lot more in the second half because he, like, toned it down a lot.
Yeah.
And just was good being Kara's friend, like, the best friend that she needed.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed him much more in the second half of the season. And I loved it, too. I just love that it's so unapologetically hopeful. Like, we don't have enough of that. This is the Superman story that you want, and we're getting it with Supergirl.
Yes. Yeah. It's so true. This is what... I saw someone who tweeted it. It was Mark Wade, the comic book writer for like loads of stuff. Retweeted a tweet that then I retweeted, which was basically like, "Does anyone want a Superman movie directed by Brad Bird?" And I was just like, "Oh my god! Now that someone has said it, that's all I want."
Need the writing in there too, not just direction.
I mean, Brad Bird, pretty much anything that he turns his hand to usually is pretty great, but as long as David Goyer isn't doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Which we talk about in our Batman v Superman special.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah.
But speaking of delightful things.
Yes.
We will continue on with The Flash, which was actually slightly less delightful this week.
I know.
That's not to say it wasn't good, because I thought it was a really good episode. It was just very dark. Mm. This was one of The Flash's dark episodes. So this was the episode where we pretty much found out all about Zoom. So they did a really interesting job of setting up these really deliberate parallels between Hunter Zolomon, who is... Jay Garrick, quote unquote, who is Zoom, and Barry, like both witnessed their mother's death at the age of 11. Barry obviously saw Eobard Thawne kill her and his father was framed, whereas for Hunter, his father murdered his mother and then he got sent off to an orphanage and he became a serial killer. So, you know, cheerful.
Yeah.
And he kind of taunts Barry and basically is like, we're very similar, but I feel like despite those parallels, which I thought were very interesting, especially because you have the parallels between their costumes and everything,
yes,
that Hunter Zolomon just has this psychopathy underneath everything, that where he would be more likely to become a serial killer in Barry's shoes, but Barry is not as likely to go down that way if he were in Hunter's shoes, I feel like.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Also, his admittance that the reason why he dresses like the Flash was to give everyone on Earth 2 hope, just to rip it away from them again. And I was like going, oh my god!
He's so twisted, which
really is.
I thought was interesting. And I was kind of wondering how much they had told Teddy Sears about the character he was signing up for. And then I read an interview that basically said he knew, like, shortly after getting the part, that he was going to switch this at some point, though he thought, because it took so long to get there, that maybe they had changed their minds before the switch actually happened. But he was told from the very beginning that he should keep in mind that the only thing that is real for him is his feelings for Caitlin. Literally the only thing that is real to him, which I thought was interesting, which makes it more obvious why he kidnaps her at the end. But I just found this really fascinating, these very direct parallels between Barry and Hunter. There's some obvious ones and then some maybe not as obvious. And it was very intriguing, and I feel like this was sort of the personal link that we maybe didn't quite have before, like making them so similar in so many ways, but so polar opposite at the same time, really hammers home what a personal thing this has become. And I was really fascinated by it.
Yeah, this episode was just good. Like, really good all around for, yeah, getting that personal connection to, other than the betrayal, and him infiltrating their group as a friend. Like, other than that, this is the more, the bigger personal connection back to who Hunter Zolomon is and who he is as a villain, and those parallels definitely show how you can go down a similar path, or you can start off on a similar path, and there's massive divergences depending on who you are as a person. And I really like that a lot. But he really is terrifying as a villain. And also, we got to find out how they existed on Earth 1 and Earth 2 at the same time.
Yes, we finally got our explanations, except the man in the mask, because Barry asks, and he's like, you wouldn't believe me. So,
wait, what? No, I want to know who's the man in the mask.
I have a theory, but I'll save that.
Okay.
Based on something that Greg Berlanti tweeted. But so they have the, like, he kidnaps Wally and says, your speed for Wally, because Wally has moved into the West House, which is this really adorable scene. And he finally calls Joe Dad, and it was just, it was so sweet. But so he kidnaps Wally, so Barry is giving up his speed for it. So while they're waiting, Hunter basically answers all their questions and is like, how did this happen? And they're like, is it a speed mirage? How? And he's like, no, it's not. And I'm like, I told you it was not a speed mirage. That couldn't work. So he explains, and I was so fascinated by this, that he went back in time and found another version of himself, explained his plan, and convinced this other version of himself to be murdered for the plan, and his other self was so impressed by the plan that he went with it.
I know! I was like, oh my god, he's so messed up!
So no matter the time, like, that's how twisted this guy is, that he's just, he appreciates the hardcore deception of it so much that he's willing to die to be a part of it. Which, but so that answered the question of who that extra body was.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was trying to figure out. I was like, he could not have been on Earth 1 and Earth 2 at the same time.
Yeah, I know. And everyone was cycling through twins and all sorts. And no, apparently it's alternate past self allowing themselves to be murdered for an equally crazy, insane plan.
Which was kind of amazing, if you think about it. I kind of love it. Like, it's just so twisted that it's perfect for such a good villain. So, I love it. So, we got our explanation there. We still don't know who the man in the mask is, though. I assume that'll be, like, a finale reveal or something. But, so, Greg Berlanti got some nasty tweets thrown at him, like, you made Jay Garrick, the original Flash, a villain, how dare you, sort of thing. So he responded basically being like, we love Jay Garrick, we would never do that, just keep watching.
Ooh.
And then I said, okay, is the guy in the mask the real Jay Garrick?
I actually hope so. That would be really cool. Honestly, if the man in the Iron Mask, man in the Iron Mask.
I mean, we don't know his face, the real Jay Garrick's face, so I don't quite know how that would work. But, like, it seems relevant that Greg Berlanti was like, keep watching, there's something to do with Jay Garrick. But basically they're saying we would not actually turn Jay Garrick into a villain because we love him. So that was interesting. But so after, so Zoom slash Hunter Zolomon gets Barry's speed. Barry trades his speed for Wally, which he's more, he goes through his deal. I can't believe he actually went through with it. Like, they rescued Wally and then he still gave him his speed.
I know.
I would have made sure Wally was safe and then just like taken him down.
Or at least attempted to take him down.
But I guess maybe they figured he would just go back after him and kill him or something if they didn't. But so Barry gives up his speed and Hunter takes it and he kidnaps Caitlin. And I guess he returns to Earth too because they've reopened a breach. Sisko did it because he's learning his powers.
Yeah.
So there's a breach open to Earth 2 again. And Hunter Zolomon took Caitlin, which I imagine is because he genuinely does have feelings for her, which they were saying, like, it's not planned, but he does really have feelings for her. So that is happening. And then now Barry is a regular human again.
Yeah. I wonder if there's more to what they did than they're letting on. Like, it doesn't make sense to me that they would all willingly give Zoom a boost, a power boost. Like, they knew at least what Zoom was after, but I wonder what if there's something more to it than he's just inherited Barry's speed. Like, could they have figured something out in the meantime with, like, Caitlin's research that she'd been doing into, like, the Speed Force and Velocity 9 and stuff like that, that maybe they've manipulated something in the background? I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me that they would so willingly give
Zoom... Well, it wasn't exactly willingly.
Yeah, I know, but they could have figured something else out. It just doesn't make sense to me. I'm like, they're going, there's got to be something more to this than just... Barry is powerless and they've given Zoom his power. There's got to be more to it than just that.
So based on the preview, it looks like Barry's gonna try to fight a metahuman faking that he still has powers.
Oh god, Barry, no.
Like, he needs people to think that the Flash is still protecting them.
Oh my god, Barry.
So how are they gonna get his powers back? Like, ugh, how is this gonna work? So they've really set up some intriguing things.
Yes.
With this episode. I thought it was really great. And now that we have this story on Hunter Zolomon, I am so impressed with kind of how he, like, we were kind of going, where's Jay all this time? He keeps just, like, not being there. And now we're like, oh my god, that was totally on purpose. Like, he was lying low.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So it was all on purpose. So, like, in hindsight, I am super impressed with certain things that I maybe thought were a little questionable at first. So I'm kind of excited to rewatch the season knowing what the big reveal is.
Yes, because, yeah, like you said, little things like him disappearing, like things not quite adding up, things being a bit like you just thinking it was like a plot hole kind of thing.
Or just, like, they didn't want to pay Teddy Sears for this episode, so Jay wasn't at Star Labs or something.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, like, when you think about it, he was actually, like, laying low or being Zoom somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So, I'm really impressed with this. I thought it was, the answers that they gave really worked for me.
Yeah.
So...
Now we just need one more. Who is the man in the mask?
And why is he in a mask? Yeah, so super excited. Oh, and it seems like Wally's gonna find out. He's gotta find out that Barry's the Flash pretty soon.
Yeah.
After all of this. Because now he knows that, like, Joe and Iris are in on everything with the Flash. So he's gonna have some questions.
Oh, understandably, he's gonna have some questions, and I'm really looking forward to him being brought into the loop a little bit more, and I wonder what that'll mean for his relationship with Barry specifically, like how it'll change the way that he looks at him, especially when he then looks back at things that have happened and he's been, like, really hard on Barry and then realizing that Barry's actually the Flash and this other person, and while the Flash was, like, doing stuff, he thought Barry was hiding, cowering, pretty much. Or
like when a shark ripped their ceiling off. Yeah.
So how is it going to change the way that he looks at Barry? That'll be quite interesting.
Yeah, and when are they going to make Wally a speedster?
Yeah, for real. I want to see Speedster Wally, please.
I mean, I would not be surprised if that was, like, another season or two down the line or something.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll be an immediate thing, but I feel like they've done a good job lately of kind of slowly integrating Wally into the family, like, in a way that feels realistic. Like, he's letting his walls, down. That unintentional. I realized as I was saying it that that was a pun. But, like, he's letting his walls down with the family, and bit by bit, until like, he finally, like, calls Joe dad and moves into the house. So I've liked how he's been becoming part of the family.
Yeah, me too.
West family feels.
So many feels. So many.
But yeah, so really great episode of The Flash, I thought.
Yeah. Really impressed.
Yeah. Arrow was not on this week, which was probably a good thing.
Yeah.
So it'll be back next week on the 27th, and then we will be dealing with the aftermath of Laurel's death, which, won't that be delightful? Speaking of things that actually were delightful.
Yes.
Legends of Tomorrow just continues to be so much comic booky fun. So we had two episodes. We had their adventures in the Wild West, and then we had them kidnapping their younger selves. So everything was pretty much great, but I really loved the Wild West episode. The guy who played Jonah Hex was phenomenal. Like, he looked like he stepped out of the comic book.
It was so good. It was so uncanny just looking at him and going, you look like a comic book on screen. It was that good.
You look much better than the feature film version.
No, 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 Caitlin, no. No. We don't talk about that.
I'm just complimenting what a good job they did on the show. Mm-hmm. But I quite enjoyed this episode. They go and hide in the Wild West because that's a place that they can hide out from the Time Masters who've sent some hunters after them. And so Mick kind of has decided that it's in his best interest to play nice with everybody because he's now on the hit list as well because he failed as Kronos to kill everybody. So yeah. Now he's kind of back among the gang, and there's a hilarious scene where he challenges Sarah to a drinking contest and she drinks him under the table,
which was so great. I was like, oh my god, this is excellent.
They have such a good bromance.
I really, really like that. Actually, I would love to see, and I don't know if it'll happen, but the reintroduction of Mick made me really long for Leonard and Mick resolving everything that happened between them and then them finding a way back to being really good friends, because we do get a little moment where Mick is talking to his younger self and his younger self is holding baby Leonard and he's like, don't do anything to hurt my future partner in crime.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like because we're such fans of Captain Canary that, like, if Leonard and Sarah ever became a thing, it would work because Mick likes Sarah.
Yeah.
This and is respects what... her. Like, that is really, like, the only way that could work, because both of them like her and she can fit with both of them.
Yes. And this is what I was getting at, is that that is something that I would love to see, is the dynamic between those three. If Leonard and Mick resolve their differences and they find a way to be friends, because the arc that they're going with Mick right now is really great, and I'd love to see him integrated more. I may be still towing the line the way that a couple of the characters do in respect to what they're willing to do. They're not strictly a hero in the traditional sense. They do things that maybe are a little bit more morally gray, but I'd really love to see them find a way to being friends again and continuing to develop the friendship between Sarah and Leonard and then Sarah and Mick as well. And then I do ship Captain Canary, so I'm like...
But even if it's just a friendship between them, like, it's a good dynamic between that trio.
Yeah. It really is, because it has been since this show started, because that scene in the bar in the 70s basically set it up as, like, loving these three when they're off causing mischief and mayhem together. Like, I really love that.
I feel like it's not easy to be someone that Mick likes and respects, and he pretty much immediately liked Sarah, which... And then when... In the second episode, when their younger selves are fighting, and Mick is so amused when the younger Sarah is, like, beating his younger self.
I know.
Like, she slaps him, and Mick's like, hey! He's so amused by it. It just cracks me up. And, and Mick is the one who helps Sarah stop the pilgrim when they're rescuing young Sarah. And young Sarah's like, she's... And he goes, quite the badass.
Yes!
So good. So I really like Mick since he's come back. Like, the way... So I wrote about this in my review, that they're really kind of low-key setting up this fascinating character arc. Like, we've really loved on the character arc that they've had for Leonard, but it feels kind of still... They're still developing it, but what they're setting up for Mick has been really interesting. And like, these few episodes since he's come back and has started integrating the team, like, especially when he's interacting with his younger self, and first he's kind of threatening and like, I know why you, what you did and everything. And then finally he tells his younger self, like, it's not your fault, which is something that clearly he had wanted someone to tell him his whole life. And so he can finally tell himself that. And so it seems like they are redeeming him slowly, but in a way that feels believable for him, which I am really, really into.
Yeah, same. I think it's really worked for him. And I think he, because he was one of the characters, and I think it worked that he wasn't as developed at the point where he splits off and then he's revealed to be Kronos. Like, I think the lack of major development that we got with, like, some of the other characters really worked in that respect to making him Kronos, and obviously everything that had happened to him with a lot of people, like, writing him off and so on, really worked to play into that. And now that he's come back after that, because obviously we've seen Kronos through the whole series as well, so knowing that those two characters are the same, and then seeing them come together, and then when moving on from that point, like, that's really interesting to me, and I really love what they're doing right
now. They're giving him a lot more nuance than he had. So obviously, however, all this time that he spent among the Time Masters has kind of affected him. And Sarah says it when they have that drinking scene, like, you're different. And he's like, is it a good different or a bad different? And she says, I haven't decided yet.
Yeah.
But he is different. And in a way that doesn't feel unbelievable when you know what he has kind of been through. So it feels organic. And he was the character who was most a caricature up until this point. And so they're really doing some interesting things. And I really like it.
Yes. Yeah, agreed. I'm glad to have him back. I wasn't sure.
I never thought I would say that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't think that would be a thing that I was saying, but I'm actually genuinely glad to have him back.
What they're doing with him is really working, so yeah. I like it. Also, in the time travel episode, every episode is a time travel episode. In the past lives episode, past selves, we got to see a young Quentin, because a younger Sarah was at SCPD for Take Your Daughter to Work Day. And we know how close those two are. Like, he was the first person besides, like, Oliver and everybody that she revealed herself to.
Yeah.
And just, like, his opinion of her after she comes back from the League of Assassins, like, matters so much. And so they developed that dynamic so much in Arrow. So I was so emotional seeing the two of them. And when he tells the older Sarah that he's so proud of her, I just melted.
Yeah, this especially coming after the Arrow episode where Laurel has died as well. Oh. Like, seeing the dynamic between Quentin and Sarah as well. Like, that, yeah, that especially was quite difficult to watch. It was really good, but knowing what's going to be coming next.
Yeah. Ugh. It's hard to watch Legends with Sarah not knowing.
Yeah.
It's kind of rough. But we had another moment where I think Stein says to Sarah that, you know, I'm surprised you didn't tell your younger self not to get on a certain boat. And we have seen multiple times now that Sarah has really decided that she wants her younger self to become that person she is now. So she has really accepted herself, and that made me really happy to see.
Same. I thought that was a really great moment for her as well, because she's so determined that the life that she's lived is important. And it's like that, knowing that and not having that kind of, not wanting to risk trying to change her own timeline, like that's really cool. I think I like that they've done that with her, because she's always struggled with her identity and who she is and what she stands for and that sort of thing. So it's nice to know that where she is right now, she's very confident in herself, even if she may not necessarily see herself as a hero still. Like, I really, really like that.
Yeah, she's gotten comfortable in her skin.
Yeah.
Which I like. Another thing we have going on is that Rey and Kendra are engaged. That is a thing that is happening. I have two things that I liked. Kendra and Sarah continuing to be friends. Love it. Gotta love the ladies hanging out, having fights and stuff when they're training. Like when Kendra gets the knock on her, she's like, either you're getting better or I'm getting lazy.
Yes.
That was cute.
I love that.
So I love that the two ladies are being friends, but I also like that Kendra and Rey, instead of letting this linger for three episodes, just talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it kind of goes back to this thing Sarah says. She's like, who wants a relationship based on communication? Bleh. Which was so funny. But then, like, Kendra and Rey actually, like, talked about what they were feeling and moved on from there, having, like, talked like adults. It's amazing how communication works.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish this had been developed more, or it had moved a little bit slower, but it is what it is. So.
Yeah. I don't love the story. It's pretty much the weakest part of the series for me. But if I have to look for a positive in it, that was where I found my positive.
Yeah. Definitely.
And we got to meet Rey's old fiancé very briefly.
Oh, like, I know. Oh,
which was sad. Okay. But, yeah, and they made a mention to Lisa Snart, but I guess they didn't want to pay the actress, so she was completely off screen.
Yeah.
Oh, and we had the stuff with Rip. We met his younger self, who, that kid was uncanny, looking like Arthur Darvill. Oh my God.
Oh, my gosh.
But I thought it was interesting that he's kind of, with every episode, losing a little bit more control that he had. And I feel like him having to reveal his past to the team is another way that he's lost a measure of control, which I think kind of works.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. Because we've made a point of saying that he kind of sucks as a leader a lot of the time.
And so it's kind of gotten to the point where it seems like it has to be purposeful. Like, he's a little bit less in charge with every passing episode.
Yes. So they are working more and more as a team dynamic and less as a you guys are working in my interests kind of thing. So,
yeah, that development kind of shows also when Jax warns his father basically about what's going to kill him.
Yeah.
When he's deployed, which that was a heartbreaking little story too, of Jax getting to meet his father. But he warns his father about the time that he gets killed, and then he tells Rip that he did it, and instead of being upset, Rip's just like, oh well, what's going to happen's going to happen. Which I thought was, that's not what he would have said four episodes ago.
Yeah, he would have freaked the hell out. He would have been like, no, you're changing the timeline. But then you have to wonder if they do manage to stop Vandal Savage, which we should assume that they are going to do that, will what they have changed in the timeline reset? Like, what'll happen? Like, will that have saved Jax's father, or will it reset to the point where it doesn't matter? Like, I don't know how this is going to work, but...
I mean, my assumption is that it changes from that whatever point they defeat him in forward. So if they defeat him in the future,
yeah,
it will only change things from that point on. I know. I just want to see, like, a time wraith hunting somebody after that Flash episode. Because these people are incompetent with time travel.
Yeah.
But it's gotten to the point where it's just kind of funny, and I just go with it.
Yeah, basically.
Like, it's doing so many wonderful things with certain characters that I'm okay with it. I can just turn my brain off for the time travel thing and just go, like, okay.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not going to freak out about it. I'm just really invested in Sarah and Leonard and Mick at this point, so we'll just go from there. But yeah, so we had some good episodes this past couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been... Yeah, superhero TV is still continuing to do some really great things, I guess... Next week's episodes are going to be interesting.
And we'll have no Supergirl to be excited about.
I know. And Lucifer's finale is on Monday as well, so I'm not even going to have Lucifer on Mondays anymore, which is sad.
You just need to catch up with Jane the Virgin, because that airs on Mondays.
Ah, I know. So for anyone who has been following my personal Twitter feed, you will have seen that in the past 2 weeks, to get over my frustration, and when I was quite ill about a week and a bit ago, I picked up Jane the Virgin, and I am now on season 2, episode 10. So I managed to get through quite a lot of it, actually, and I'm obsessed. I love it.
Speaking of delightful.
Yeah, it is incredibly delightful. I love it. I love it so much. I can't believe it took me that long to get to it. And basically, the thing that pushed me to it is that I was in an excruciating amount of pain, and I was basically like, I need something light and kind of happy and ridiculous to watch. And someone was like, oh, just watch Jane the Virgin. It's been on your list for ages to watch. And I was like, okay, I'll put it on. It's on Netflix. It's on the UK Netflix. And I was like, okay, cool. I fully intended to watch like one episode and go to sleep. Yeah, that didn't happen. I pretty much got through 4 or 5 episodes in one sitting and was like, oh my God. Because they managed to do... like huge reveals or cliffhangers in every single episode. It's amazing.
Oh, and I love that show so much.
And it doesn't feel like too much either, but basically that's my Jane the Virgin plug over. Yeah. If you're not watching it, watch it, because it's so good.
All right, so that covers our TV recaps. So we will briefly talk about some movie stories and then wrap up with some feedback. So let's talk about movies.
Yes. So I guess first things first, Spider-Man has got its actual title. So we now know what the Spider-Man solo movie is going to be called. And it is Spider-Man Homecoming, which... it's kind of a funny name for the film because obviously it's come back to Marvel in some respect. So I was like, ha ha ha, that's funny. I also want to know who he's taking to Homecoming, but I guess we'll find that out when the solo movie comes out. But Robert Downey Jr. is going to be in Spider-Man Homecoming. So, yes, Tony Stark / Iron Man is going to be showing up. Kind of hope it's just a small cameo role and he's not significantly in the movie, because I think for a Spider-Man solo movie that is supposed to be rebooting him to a certain extent, being our first major look at the character on his own and his life outside of whatever the hell is going to happen in Civil War, it needs to be very focused on him. But I think it would be nice to see Tony Stark just show up at some point in it, but I hope he doesn't become a significant part in the movie.
Wasn't that true of, what was it, Civil War? That, or was it Civil War? It was one movie that he got the cameo in and then rewrote his contract to be much bigger.
I think initially people thought, because he was added to Civil War before we knew it was going to be Civil War, and everyone started getting concerned because they were like, oh, Iron Man in a Captain America movie, like, we hope that it's not, like, a major role. And then they revealed that it was Civil War, and you can't really do Civil War without Tony Stark being a major role in it, so I don't know. It's I've heard some really good things about Tom Holland's Spider-Man personally, so I'm kind of slowly getting more excited to see him, so I guess we'll get our first taste in Civil War.
We keep things very interconnected.
Yeah. Yes. Next headline, we got the first Doctor Strange trailer. If anyone follows me on social media, you will know my thoughts about this already. They are not particularly positive, and there's a lot of debate that's been going on online since then. It made me feel uncomfortable. Admittedly, the aesthetics of it is, it looks pretty good, but the rest of it for me just was not great. At all.
I mean, I found the narrative in the trailer to be incomprehensible, so I have no idea what it's about. And Benedict Cumberbatch has no business doing an American accent.
It was a really, like, it was a pretty bad American accent. It was,
His voice is just so recognizable that it's distracting when he has such a recognizable voice, and then having the accent, it really pulls you out.
Yeah.
Of the scene.
Yeah, I just have really big issues with the huge focus on the Asian aesthetic and the costuming and everything with no Asian characters in the forefront at all. And I can't even say for certain what part of Asia that they're actually pulling from, because it's just an amalgamation of, like, different cultural aspects and clothing and stuff. They've literally just merged it all into one. And I understand the background of Doctor Strange, and I know where Doctor Strange came from, but I kind of, it basically got me off on the wrong foot with it. And I don't know that it's actually going to be able to do anything to win me back over, because the trailer just confirmed a lot of things that I'd been worried about, and comments by, like, the writers and so on since then kind of don't instill much confidence in me that basically they think keeping the setting Asian and casting a white person in that role makes it, basically eliminates the fact that it's problematic. But in fact, it makes it more problematic, because then you're basically saying that you're happy with using Asian cultures, mythologies, magic, and settings and clothing without actually having Asian people. And that's my big sticking point, because I know some of the pushback that I had on an article that I wrote about Marvel's problem with Asian representation was, at least some of the Twitter comments that I got, was basically that it's a 2-minute trailer, we can't judge it from that. But the comments that have been made since the trailer have come out have confirmed that a lot of the suspicions that I had about what they were showing in the trailer are actually what's going to be in the film. So,
but definitely go read that article, it's pretty great.
I killed myself over it, because and I know, and I fully understand that I am not an Asian voice. Like, that's one thing I struggled with, and I did talk to a couple of friends beforehand to be like, I have a real problem with this, and I really would like to write about it. Would it be something that would be a receptive thing? Like, these are, like, friends of mine who are, like, Chinese, Japanese, a couple of Filipino friends of mine, and I was like, you know, is it something that, you know, you'd be receptive to hearing? And they were like, yes, absolutely. They were like, the problem is that, you know, people won't talk about it, or they'll keep writing it off. And I link to a lot of Asian voices in media within the article. So even if you just go in and grab the links and read their stuff, please do, because some of the stuff that they have to say as well is so important, because it is a massive problem, and it's been a problem since the early 20th century. So and it's not getting any better. That's the thing. Whitewashing Asian roles is not getting any better at all. So I have a massive problem with it, especially as someone who does speak an Asian language and has done a lot of studies into culture and history of Asia, because it was something I was interested in when I was learning world history, and I took the time out to learn Japanese and stuff. So particularly for me, with my interest in Asian history, because it's something that I really love, it's really glaring to me that they're not being represented the way that they should be, or treated with the same respect as we would expect for our own characters. Of like, I can't pat them on the back for adding another white woman into the Marvel universe while they're locking out other people who desperately need better representation in superhero movies. So I have a lot of thoughts about it, and it's something that is kind of emotionally exhausting me, because the conversation around it is getting really hostile towards Asian people who do have a massive problem with it. In fact, there was a really good podcast that I listened to called, I think it was No Totally, who had Reign of April, who started the Oscars So White hashtag, and I think it was John Tse, who is I think he's a Chinese comic book writer. So they did a really interesting little podcast, and it's really great. So maybe I'll retweet it on our Twitter accounts if you do want to listen to a little bit more about where the problems are in some of this, especially with stuff like Ghost in the Shell just having happened with Scarlett Johansson. Just it's a mess, basically. Everything is a huge mess. So it's worth listening to some more stuff about it if it's something that you want to understand why it's as big a problem and why people are stuck on it, because it is a huge thing. But yeah, we're gonna start seeing things ramping up as Doctor Strange comes out. And honestly, I'll put my hands up and say now, if it continues on the trajectory that it's on, I'm not even sure that I'm going to be able to watch the film. That's the point that I'm at with it. It may be one of those deal-breaker Marvel movies for me. Which is a huge thing for me to say.
No kidding.
Yeah. It may be that one that I just can't bring myself to watch. But I guess as we see more marketing material and more trailers, I might change my mind. But at the moment, it's not looking great for me. So
we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of one of those terrifying moments when I was like ruminating on this trailer. And after I'd written the article, and after I've been talking with a couple of really great people on Twitter who had seen the article, and we got talking, like some of the people from the Nerds of Color blog, and some of like Black Girl Nerds and so on. Like, I've come to like a place where I'm like, okay, maybe it is not the film for me. If I feel this strongly about it, maybe it's a film I shouldn't support. But again, crossing that bridge when we come to it. In slightly cooler news, speaking of diversity in Marvel, Tessa Thompson has been cast in a key role for Thor 3, so Thor Ragnarok. no real kind of solid information on who she's playing. We do know that Natalie Portman isn't coming back, so Jane Foster isn't going to be in Thor Ragnarok. The speculation right now is that she is potentially going to be the new love interest, which makes me think that she may be Enchantress, maybe, or she may be Valkyrie or one of those characters, because those are characters that Thor has had a romantic relationship with before. So yeah, but I'm really, really excited to see her joining the Marvel Universe, because I loved her in Creed. So she was really great. I'm pretty sure she was in Veronica Mars, wasn't she?
According to the article, she was.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing her, though, in Thor, so I'm excited.
I'll just wait till we find out more.
Yeah, I kind of want to know who she's playing. That's the next bit for me. I want to know who she's playing, but I'm never going to be really sad about more ladies joining the universe, so.
Yeah, my interest in Thor 3 is just pretty minimal at this point.
I guess until we know the specifics of what they're going to be tackling, but...
Yeah, because yeah. Thor 2 was kind of terrible.
This is true. I don't think they really knew what they wanted Thor 2 to be, which was a shame because they had some great actors in that movie as well that they could have utilized a lot better. I'm looking at Christopher Eccleston in particular here.
My doctor. He's my doctor.
Oh, me too! He's been my doctor for so long! I'm like, oh, I love him. Though, in interesting Marvel news that dropped, they've pulled Inhumans, the Inhumans movie from the Phase 3 slate.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. Now, it does make a point to say that this doesn't mean that it's cancelled. They've just removed it, which, yeah. I wonder if they're going to put something in its place or they're going to push it back, but they haven't given it a different release date. Is it going to now be in Phase 4? Have they decided that Inhumans isn't a direction that they want to go in for the movies? Do they want to
especially since it's so TV, the yeah. TV show is so focused on Inhumans.
Oh, that's a...
Yeah, that's ominous.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those things where I was like, I came back to my computer today and that was the first thing I saw and I was like, oh, wow, okay, that's something.
It seems like it would be, because of how much lead time you need for a movie, it would be very complicated to tie a movie in to the TV show that would have multiple seasons of yeah. information. And it would be very strange to not tie them together.
Yes.
Because it's like they're both Inhumans. So I can see it being very difficult to figure out how to tie them together.
Mm. Yeah, that's very true. But, yeah, for now, no Inhumans movie.
So we'll just enjoy it on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for now.
Yeah.
On the DC side, we got another trailer for Suicide Squad from the MTV Movie Awards, which I thought was pretty decent.
Same. I could have done with a little less Joker, but...
That's how I'm going to feel for the entire movie. He could be in like 30 seconds and I'll be like, I could do with less.
Yeah. I'm not digging it. The Joker stuff so far. I'm over.
And every time Jared Leto opens his mouth, it's like, why?
I know. I feel so sorry for the cast for having to put up with his ridiculous, like, behavior. Like, it's insane. If I was on a movie set and I was having to deal with someone doing that, I wouldn't be able to.
Like, it's harassment.
It is harassment, and it's making me feel really uncomfortable, and I hate that they're all playing it off as, like, this big ha-ha, nudge-nudge, wink-wink, joke-joke. Like, it's not. It's not funny. It's gotten to the point where it's, like, really disgusting, and I'm really upset about it, so...
And it kind of misses the point of the Joker.
Yeah, it does. And I get method acting. I do. I get that for some roles, people prefer to method act. Like, fine. That's fine if that's how you get into the character and the role and whatever. But there is method acting and then there's going way too far. And he went way too far a long, 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 long time ago.
Yeah. So as much Joker as we see will be too much Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Will be too much of this Joker.
Yeah.
I'll just say that. But the rest of it I thought looked pretty decent. So
yeah.
My interest level and excitement has kind of gone through peaks and valleys, and it's on the upward trend again, so we'll see.
Yeah.
So, the other bit of DC news is that Willem Dafoe is going to be in both Justice League 1 and 2, parts 1 and 2, and he's going to be playing a good guy. We don't know who, but that's kind of funny because Willem Dafoe is generally a villain, especially, you know, from Spider-Man.
Yeah.
As many of us will recognize him, but he has had a very, very long and storied career, so he's a very well-regarded actor. So
I know.
I'm always happy to see Willem Dafoe in things. It's just kind of fun that they're bringing him in to be a good guy.
I know. I was like, oh, wow, okay. Cool.
Yes, they've rebooted Spider-Man, so he can change sides.
Yes.
And, you know, go from Marvel to DC, whatever.
Yeah.
But we also got a little bit of news from CinemaCon that Deadpool 2 is officially in the works, because duh.
Yeah.
In the least shocking news in the world.
I know.
And Ben Affleck is directing a solo Batman movie, which I said on our Batman v Superman special that I am all for.
Yeah, same.
I liked him a lot. He was probably my favorite part besides Wonder Woman of that movie, and I would like to see him in a competent Batman movie.
So, oh man.
We'll save the rest of our thoughts for the special, but I am more excited about that than I thought I would be, but I thought he was pretty great in that part.
Yes. Yeah.
And we know he is a very good director too. So.
Yes, he's an incredible director, so that's not a bad move on their part. So
yeah. So that pretty much does it for news.
Yeah.
So we are taking a break, as we said, from Comic Corner until Danya has recovered from the trauma of Civil War. And before I get it. Yeah. So we're going to move on to feedback. We don't have too much because we've been MIA again. Sorry about that. But Gordon tweeted us and said, "So I just watched Edward Norton's The Incredible Hulk. Does anyone else think it's a perfect analogy for why Zack Snyder's DC movies suck and totally undercuts the argument of bias toward Marvel? The Incredible Hulk has all the Snyderisms and is terrible as a result." And I will just say that's the only Marvel movie I have not seen, and that's on purpose.
Oh, that's interesting. Huh. Because it is technically part of Phase 1. So that's interesting that you haven't seen it.
Once I started catching up on all the Marvel movies, I knew that everyone said it was terrible. And they were recasting the Hulk anyway. So I just said, screw it, not even going to waste my 2 hours.
Yeah, fair enough.
And then we got Ruffalo.
Yes, we did. We did. And I think he's great. So,
but do you have thoughts on this, Danya?
It does pretty much parallel kind of almost exactly why I did not like Batman v Superman. I wasn't a fan of The Incredible Hulk either. So, yeah, it definitely does have a lot of Snyderisms in it as well. I think it was a movie that came out at a time where they were still trying to find their footing, and they didn't quite know what direction they wanted to go in with the character either, and it just did not work at all. So, the Hulk is so hard to get right in a solo movie because it's a character that works so well off other characters when you've got, like, the Hulk working in a team. So, yeah, I don't know. We got another comment. We got one from Anthony, who answered a slightly older question of the week, basically where we were asking what you would want, like, your I guess your alternate universe self one. I think this was for, which was, I would hope a psychologist or maybe a history or English teacher. Hell, maybe Nightwing.
Maybe Nightwing, who teaches history or English during the day.
Oh my god, that would be... Where's the fanfic?
And then Cassie said, lols, reading Riordan's Sword of Summer. Apparently Thor watches TV. This made me think of you. And it's too bad that Karen's not here.
I know. Tweet. I know. She would love that. But we're thinking of Karen. Of
course. She included a picture that has a highlight and it's talking about Arrow.
Yeah.
The League of Assassins and Arrow. They just keep coming back. That's amazing.
Yeah. Oh.
So yeah, that was all our feedback. So hopefully you guys will hit us up with some more feedback next week when we're on a bit more regular schedule. Though just another reminder, our next one will be a little bit delayed as well because everyone hate Danya for seeing Civil War.
Yeah, apparently.
But just a reminder, you can get in touch with us at Hero Hype Podcast. HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com and this post on Hypeable.com where you can answer our question of the week. We had our previous question and got no responses, so we're just going to keep our same question, which is, would you kill a future dictator?
Yes. And that is the reason we got no responses is because that question is on the episode that's only just going up. Because yes. Of technical difficulties. So figured we'd give you a little bit more time to actually answer this one.
I didn't realize I was doing some research for an article on Booster Gold and did not realize that Perdegaton was actually a character in the comics, the future dictator in question.
Yes. So
it all ties together.
Yeah, it does. It really, really does. Especially in the TV, DC TV universe.
Yeah, they're doing much better on the TV side than the movie side. But yeah, so that covers it for this week. Thank you guys for being patient with us. We promise to get back to things coming up. And we love you, and rate us on iTunes, and all that good stuff. So until next time, I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Danya.
And we'll see you next week. Bye!